I am not starting this week's episode by saying, welcome to the Mentally Chill podcast. I'm Bella. Well, I kind of just said it, but for the record, my name isn't blah, blah, blah. It could be. It might as well be. But I'm not saying the regular intro because I really just have had a terrible week and a half, and I really want to start with the F word, but I'm not that badass. And in case my mom ever figures out podcasts, I don't want her to hear me say that. So I will say, damn it. I think my mom can handle that word. So damn it. It's been a shitty week, man. But really, this is kind of starting the show with my new segment, Things I Should Tell My Therapist, because I should tell my therapist about how I'm afraid to say the F word and I'm 35 years old. What is going on? It's not that I'm afraid to say the F word. I've said it in the show a million times, but I'm just afraid for my mom to hear it. And I think if she listened to a podcast, she'd probably listen to maybe the first minute or five. And so I think usually I save the F-bombs for the deeper part of the convos here, not like the straight up intro, but I really should talk to my therapist about why that makes me nervous. It does. It makes me very nervous. Like, she will think I'm essentially a meth addict giving BJs to survive if I say the F word. That's kind of the equivalent. But the reason I want to say the F word so badly is because I got devastating news about my dog, which is who you hear clanking around in the background. He has severe dementia and just paces and paces and paces, and he keeps pacing over his water bowl. But the news I got is regarding his kidneys, and they're in kidney failure. And I am devastated, and I wanted to talk more about it on this intro, but we're not going to worry about that right now because I've already cried all the tears one could cry. So it's showtime, baby. Put on those satin spats. Get ready for the show. I have YouTube personality and registered licensed therapist Katie Morton on, giving us tons of advice on all sorts of different things. And she has such good input. And I start off the show by telling her we're excited. And I say we, but it's just me. And maybe you guys, hopefully, that we're excited to have a real professional on the show, because usually it's just dummies like moi and like Kyle. But I forgot I have resident consultant Jen on the show occasionally, and she is a professional. I just forget she's a professional because I've known her since she was 13 and I've seen her childhood bedroom, and there's no way that someone I've known as a 13-year-old can now be a professional, especially in a doctory way. So sorry, resident consultant Jen, you are a professional, but not in my mind. So I asked people on Patreon to send in questions for Katie, and they did, and she answers them. And then we talk about a bunch of other things, including her book called Are You Okay?, which is a beginner's guide to your mental health. So anyone starting out in this nightmare should check it out. And I really like the idea of having people ask questions. So I have another guest coming up who knows what the F he's talking about. And if you want to ask him questions, I'll post who he is on Patreon. And that's just a ploy to get you to be on Patreon, because I need your support to do this podcast. So if you feel like this show helps you or makes you feel good or does something for you, please throw me $2, $5, $10, $1,000 on Patreon. The higher the cash, the higher my voice goes. So if someone gives me $5,000, I actually will break glass. That's how high my voice will go. And this is like, it's so weird because I try to not think about this as a form of begging. You know, it's like very difficult for me to look at it as not begging. But recently I got a request through someone on Facebook who I don't know. I'm friends with everyone I don't know on Facebook. And they requested money from me. And I didn't know who they were. And I was like, I don't think I owe someone money unless I randomly did drugs and don't remember, which you probably wouldn't if you did. But I looked up his profile, and his whole page is just asking for people to Venmo him money. And it's just interesting because now begging has gone technological. So I don't think I'm him. You know what's crazy is I do see other Patreon pages for people with podcasts, and some of them have insane amounts of subscribers. I mean, like thousands and thousands. I'm trying to get to 200. It's a very slow death march to 200. But we will get there. The small yet mighty will rise and give me $2 a month. So this is why I'm not in sales. Can you guys tell? I'm the worst salesperson. When I was a kid and it was Girl Scout cookie selling time, I would shrink into my closet and just vibrate like, I can't do it. No, please don't make me ask people for things. And now here I am publicly doing it behind a microphone. And big thanks to John C. for joining Patreon. And coincidentally, that is my father's first name and his last initial. However, he supported me enough as a child. He's no longer doing it. So John C., not my dad, welcome to Patreon, aka The Call, aka The Mental Hospital. Anyway, you guys, I've gone on long enough. I'm excited for this week's show. This week's disclaimer, the sound is pretty shitty. This is what happens when you leave me in charge of technology. We recorded remotely. She's in LA. I am in New York State. And the internet is weird. So I blame the internet. It's never my fault. I should tell that to my therapist too. Why are things never my fault? Yet things seem to always go bad for me. That must be my fault. But for real, it sounds terrible and I'm really sorry. And because it sounds so terrible, I really couldn't bring myself to do much editing because I couldn't listen to this. It was difficult for me. So my apologies in advance to you and to Katie. And this is why I hate recording remotely. People write to me sometimes and say I'd love to do your show, but they live in Tennessee. Sorry, ain't happening because this is how it sounds. So this won't happen often, I promise. And one more thing, I hope you guys have an awesome Christmas and holiday, and I hope you're in more of a holiday spirit than I am. I'm really bummed I'm not getting to be a Christmas nerd, but I hope you guys are. Anyway, that's it for this week's intro. Hopefully I'll see you on Patreon. That's patreon.com/mentallychill. And until then, enjoy this week's show. So I was excited to tell my listeners that you were going to be on the show because I had gotten so many requests. So to start with, I would love to do questions from them for you.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay, awesome. So I'm going to read them. I'm going to give you a little background on what they gave me. But okay. The funny thing is the show never really has a professional on it ever. And
oh,
so
gotcha.
Having a professional.
This is the chance.
Yes, our one opportunity. So a couple questions from listeners. So I have one listener and she said her question is, why is it that I justify being treated badly by my significant other because they suffer from an untreated mental illness? And also, what would be a safe way to get out of that toxic relationship?
I honestly think that a lot of us allow ourselves to be treated like shit. We just do. And I think it's because we treat ourselves like shit. And I know that that's sometimes hard for people to like accept because we're like, no, but I love myself and I want things to get better. But I talk about this all the time on my channel and in my book, like the importance of self-talk. And I find that those of us who accept as fact that we are lazy, stupid, fat, no one likes us, we're unlovable, there's a lot of messages that we tell ourselves or have heard maybe when we're younger and now we just accept them as fact. I find if we don't argue back against those, they essentially kind of they come true because we put ourselves in situations and relationships that, you know, follow those beliefs or those statements. And I find that those of us who are repeatedly in toxic or abusive relationships don't have any self-confidence left. We don't feel good about who we are. We think that we're, you know, terrible, bad, lazy, and all of those nasty things. And so the first thing, honestly, to do before you try to get out of a relationship with someone, and this is with or without a mental illness, like I know that I might get backlash for this, but that's not an excuse. You're still responsible for yourself. Like I talk about this on the channel all the time. Like just because you have a mental illness doesn't mean you have free reign to treat everybody like garbage. That's not okay.
Oh, I've been using that excuse forever. I'm very bummed.
Don't be a jerk. No, I'm just kidding. You know, we all have to treat others well as we can. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to flake sometimes because we're super depressed and we don't want to leave the house. But that, you know, also doesn't mean that we're just going to scream and yell at our best friend because they're easy prey when we feel bad. And so just know that because they have an untreated mental illness, that doesn't give them the right or the freedom to treat you that way. And I think the healthiest way to get out is honestly to, if it's safe, I don't know how abusive or toxic this is, but if it's safe, it's okay to tell them, like talk to them, communicate.
Specific scenario that it's semi-dangerous.
Okay. Then you don't talk to them and you honestly find the ways, like you have to have a plan in place. where you have somewhere you can go. You can get a safe distance. You may have to change your number or whatever to keep yourself safe, and put the plan together and do it. And don't tell them anything about it, because if they know, they might try to hurt you or keep you there. And we don't want anything like that to happen. So it's best if we just, you know, get out. But right. I would set up like a structure of safety first, like a place to live. Make sure that, you know, if they know where you work, that there's protection in place. You let your people know at work. I know that sucks, but go to HR. They're supposed to keep you safe. You know, all of that stuff.
Totally. I feel like it's a juggling act when you're trying to get out of a toxic relationship, especially I know for this listener, she has her own problems with depression. And so it's like this juggling act of trying to build up your self-esteem, trying to get up the strength to even think that you can be alone. And then the third ball you're trying to keep in the air is not letting that person know. And it's like juggling, you know, physically actually juggling is so hard. I can't imagine, you know, trying to juggle those almost non-tangible things. But so
yeah, like the emotional juggling of like, shit. How do I do this? How do I not let them know that I'm distant, even though I'm planning to leave in like 3 days?
Yeah, you know, exactly. And I think when you're, you know, depressed and you're reliant on someone, I think what the hardest part is knowing that you can fend for yourself once you're out of this relationship. Mm-hmm. How do you get to that point where you're like, I'm okay if I'm alone? You know, do you go out to eat 1,000 times alone and go, well, that's not so bad. Take yourself to the movies alone. Like, what's the process to get that strength?
Yeah. And I mean, you could do that. You could take yourself out to dinner and go to a movie, but I think it comes more from within, back to that like positive self-talk. Like you could go back. I would encourage anybody in this situation who thinks, oh, I can't live on my own. What'd you do before they were here? I'm sure you did just fine. So just consider, go take yourself back in your mind to the time before they were with you. How did you get along then? And remind yourself that you still have those qualities to allow yourself to exist and, you know, thrive on your own.
Yeah. I think also maybe imagining what the future holds, if this is what you're continuing to choose 5 years from now, 3 months from now, 10 years from now, and where you're going to be. I tend to be a little masochistic in the way I help myself. So I scare myself away from things. Is that a bad tactic to do? Because I'll beat myself up. I'll go, oh, you'll be, you know, this is going to be you in 10 years if you continue down this path. Can you even handle that? Because you already hate yourself so much.
Oh, I think that works. I mean, if you can scare your own self straight, that's kind of what you're doing, I think, is you're like, that could be you, you know?
Yeah, it's like I'm like a woman in those prisons where they bring the 12-year-old girls in who think they're badasses. I'm both of them.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm the one who thinks that whatever. And then I'm the other one who's like, you're an idiot and you better get in line.
Yeah, and I think all of us has that. It's almost like that inner monologue. Some people's is like, oh, you're so stupid, lazy. And yours is like, get your shit together. What are you doing? And it probably depends on how you feel that day. But I mean, I think all of us have that, like, not angel devil, but we have kind of like a fight going on inside of us around what maybe we know we should do and what we feel like we're able to do. I definitely think that what you experience isn't crazy. It's totally normal. And I think if it works, it works. Like if that helps you, I don't think there's anything wrong with
it. Yeah. Right. Right. Cool. Okay. I'm going to ask another question. I don't know if I should say their names. I'm sure they don't mind. Marshall. Marshall, if you don't want me to say your name, I'll cut it out after you listen to it and everyone already knows your name. He's curious on the links between depression and addiction to trauma, especially if there was early childhood trauma.
I'm curious what he means by addiction to trauma.
I mean, I kind of know what he means to an extent, because I feel like I'm addicted to sadness. I've described it before, I think, as like a blanket, and it's just like the coziest blanket, but all of a sudden you roll over and there's prickers in it and it's so uncomfortable, but yet it's keeping you warm. You know, it's what you know.
Okay. Gotcha. And I think a lot of us do feel comfortable in our mental illness as a whole, because it's predictable, for lack of a better word. Like I've talked to my audience a lot about how we can, you know, enjoy our eating disorder or our depression or our trauma, because it's comfortable, it's predictable. And anything else is unpredictable, and that seems more scary.
Yeah. So okay. I'm obsessed with analogies.
Me too.
But I think here's another one. The depression feeling good, or your eating disorder feeling good, is like the grossest, most comfortable pair of pajama pants you own. And
yes,
it takes so much energy for me to get out of those pants and put on yoga pants, which I did about 20 minutes ago before we taped the show, because I thought it would help change. Thank you. Thank you. I'm a whole different person. But it's like taking off those pants for me is such a mental process. It's a job. It's like, put on the other pants. And anyway, that's my analogy, and I don't really know where I was going.
I love analogies too. I talk about them all the time. I think it helps things. I don't know, just puts it in another perspective, so I can actually visually see it and feel it, you know.
Totally.
It's like tangible. But I think the difference, like, to answer the question about whether they're actually is it kind of like, are they actually depressed, or are they just like addicted to the trauma? I think, like, if I'm understanding correctly, I think it's the difference between being complacent and work, like doing the work. So we can be depressed and we can be struggling with our trauma and the process, because it's really, really like laborious. It's super exhausting. I always tell everybody, you know, therapy, if you're really working in it, like, it sucks. It's hard.
Oh my God.
You hate it. And it's easier in some ways to just stick your head in the mud and forget all about it. And so if this person's doing the work and processing through the trauma, like, slowly, even if they feel depressed, like, yeah, it sucks. It's hard. Like, nobody said that work would be easy. But if you're laying into it, like those cozy pants, if you find yourself just like going back to the trauma to like re-injure with it, because it feels so comfortable and normal, that's when it's a problem. So I think if we find ourselves continuing to go back when there's no need to, it's not our therapist instructing us, it's not part of our work, we're just like, I don't know, rolling on the ground of this, like, you know, in our pajama pants. I don't know if that's
right. Absolutely. And I think
you're like wallowing.
Totally. And I think we should remember that those pajama pants could also cause trauma to other people, even having to look at them. So, you know, maybe people in his life, you know, it could be affecting him. And I'm not trying to say to not be concerned with your own self, but, you know, I don't know if it's going into other areas of your life. So take off the pajama pants for other people's pleasure and not just yours, or other people's sanity and not just yours, maybe.
Yeah, no, totally.
Okay. Another question. I never really do questions on here, so I feel so professional.
You're very professional.
Okay. So Monique wants to know, how does someone maintain an emotionally stable life when it feels like everything else is just going totally haywire?
It's tricky. Everybody has bad times too. Don't think that, like, just because we're working on ourselves that it's like all gravy. I always talk about mental health and mental illness kind of like, if you've been depressed before and you finally start feeling better, it's like you caught a cold. And just because we aren't sick anymore doesn't mean that we can't become sick later. Does that make sense? So in order to...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I got two colds in a row, which I never get, but I got one about a month ago, and I was like, okay, well, that's it for the next 5 years. And then a month later, I was back with the same cold. So yes,
that
absolutely.
Sucks. I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. So we can always catch a cold again. So the depression could always come back, or the, however, you know, we're feeling can always happen again. But I do, like, the best way to maintain some sense of sanity, especially during like holiday time or when everybody's going on vacation, there can be a lot of moving parts in our lives at different times. And I think the best way to ensure that we don't lose our minds is to always have things that you do that are like self-care focused. And I know everybody uses that term now, like wellness and stuff. It's so like hot topic-y, but it's really just part of like the way that we care for our physical health. Like, I try to sleep, I try to drink water, I try to eat relatively well. You know, I try to be moderate about things. We should do the same things for our mental health every day. We should take breaks when we need to. Yeah. I should like bitch to a friend if I need to vent about it because it's just too much. I should journal maybe if I need to do it that way. Like, we need to find different ways, even if it's like going for a walk, petting a dog, or any kind of thing. Finding the things that feel good for you and doing more of that will always keep you sane, even if everything else is like in chaos.
Yeah. I can see buildings falling, and like the buildings are falling and you're sitting there just focused on your journal and you're not letting those falling buildings affecting you. You're, you know, those buildings are your life and you're just focusing on the things that keep you sane while all that shit is happening. And I think
exactly
how do they in turn deal then with those things that are all going wrong? I'm kind of in a phase right now where shit is not going well. Like I have my dog was just diagnosed with a very advanced stage of kidney failure, essentially. I'm freshly out of a relationship. I just moved cross country. I'm living at my parents and I'm 35. I had a friend take her own life. And like, you know, I have a lot of shit that just is not working right. How do I, so if I do things to stay relatively sane, but then how do I do things to actually like fix my life? How do I pick up the pieces?
And I'm sorry, all that's happening. That is really terrible. But I think that some of it's like focusing on what we can control, because we spend so much time focusing out of ourselves. Like there's nothing we can do. Like there are certain things you could probably do for your dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Certain things to make he or she comfortable,
mm-hmm.
or to make sure that they're getting the medicine that they need or whatever. Like all the things that you can do to a certain point, we can focus on those things. And I think that that helps us be more proactive instead of reactive. So we're not like, stuff keeps happening. We're like, no, these are the things I can do. This is what I can control. I can only control myself. I can, sometimes putting that in perspective can help.
Absolutely. I think I was talking about that recently about, how once you realize it is in your control, more of your fate than you really think. And I know it's that cheesy quote that, you know, it's like, 1% what happens to you and 99% how you react to it or whatever that phrase is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I realize as I get older, it's so true. And I think the problem with hearing phrases like that your entire life is that they become vanilla. They don't really have much going on because you've heard it so many times. But if you actually hear those words and really think about them, it's like mind like poof. Oh my God. Yes.
Totally.
Of course.
Yeah. Right. Cause otherwise like that, it's such a powerful phrase, but we've heard it so much. It's like has lost that power. But if you just take some time to consider it, you can get that power from it back.
Exactly.
And I think, like focusing on what you can do and what you can control is one part of it. And then also the second part, like I've been talking about this more and more on my channel, cause I think it's just really important, is allowing ourselves time to grieve. Because I think we always assume that grieving only happens when people die.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always the case. Like, I mean, you lost a friend. So yes, that's part of the grief, but also grieving the loss of the relationship, grieving the stuff that's happening with your dog, grieving just whatever maybe you thought. That is important stuff. Like we need to give ourselves time to grieve all. Like even I was talking about this in a video about dealing with miscarriage. So a lot of people, thought that having a child would look one way, looks another way. We have to grieve the loss of that like dream. That's what it would look like. Mm-hmm. And so I think just giving yourself the permission to feel it is a huge part of the healing.
Yeah. My friend said that to me the other day. I was feeling really upset about my dog. And I said, I'm losing all the momentum that I thought I had gotten over the past couple of weeks or months. I started feeling like I was doing better and all of a sudden it threw me back. And they were like, that's apples and oranges. Like your momentum in your life, in your career is totally different from grieving and going through this process. So don't beat yourself up for feeling like you're going, you're going to lay on the couch for a few days. That has nothing to do with your other life. It's in your mental health. It's natural, and don't beat yourself up for grieving. And I was tying it to more so, my mental health or, whatever progress I had. And I realized they're two separate things, and you can be sad or you can be depressed and working on your depression and have something bad happen and not have that relate necessarily to your mental health. I don't know if that's making sense what I'm saying.
No, I totally get it. Like we can have, I think what you're saying is we can have a mental illness or mental health issues as a whole, but then we can also have circumstantial things that cause us to feel bad. And those don't have to be the same.
You need to come with me to like social events and to like everywhere. And I'll say something weird and you just put it into real people, human language for me.
Happy to do so.
That'd be a good app idea. Okay. So another question, he gives a little background. His wife died in October of last year. He's 43 years old. He has two kids, 11 and 7. His mom also died in 2017, along with a friend and his cat, or cats. Wow, geez. Oh, my God. Wow. He had depression and anxiety before all that, but it's still definitely going on. He's doing individual therapy and group grief therapy. So his question, or what he says after, is, I just want to feel okay, and it seems like I'm grasping at straws because I feel lost and I'm struggling to find something that is for me, that makes me feel excited, or at least doesn't feel like a chore to do. And I'm always feeling like I'm just going through the motions. It feels almost like people describe a midlife crisis, only it's way worse. Are there approaches that I may benefit from?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of thoughts I have on that. My first thought was like, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, first approach, flip off the universe. Like, yeah. Let your anger out.
Yeah, like, are you kidding me? So yeah. I think that's completely fair. But then also, like, even with all that happening, my guess is, I would hypothesize that this person hasn't even had any time for himself in general. Yes, he's going to therapy and going to group, but I have a feeling it's been like, got to take care of the kids and got to help maybe my dad if his father's still alive. Like, and then, oh, I lost this and that. And it's like, you're probably just the go-to person. You're trying to make things happen and you're really being proactive, which with the therapy and group and all, that's really great. But over a year in, you're like, is this all? Is this the best I can do? And you probably, like, if you were my patient, I'd be like, you probably lost a sense of who you are. And that's why you don't know what makes you happy anymore. So I'd encourage you to be curious. And I think a lot of, like, the work that, I mean, I personally do is just be curious about myself. Because I find, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, but, like, I find that when we get older, we lose curiosity.
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, teenage me was so angsty and worried about everything and curious about what everyone else was doing and what's happening. Just curious. What does this mean? Who's having sex? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Why do I feel this way? Why don't I have boobs like somebody else? Like, all the random, crazy, stupid thoughts we have. And now at the ripe age of 35, I'm like, wow, I don't ever take time to check in and be curious about myself and my own development. And I would hypothesize that this may be what happened to him. And so just be a little curious, try out new things. I know therapy and group, they're great. And I'm glad you're doing that. And I think the groups are super helpful. So it reminds you, you're not crazy and what you're feeling isn't weird, but I might encourage you, maybe instead of that 1 week, or to add on, take a cooking class or go join that hiking group that you've always been like, huh, I've never done that before. Like, I'd encourage him to try something that maybe he hasn't done before. Doesn't know if he likes it or not, and just be curious about things. Get back in touch with who you are and, like, what you get excited about, and you'll learn slowly, like, what fills you up, what makes you feel joyful, and all of that.
I think, he said chore. It feels like a chore, and that's something that I've experienced since I was about 18. Everything has felt like a chore for me. But I notice that once I actually do said quote unquote chore, I always feel better. And I don't know if you know the podcaster, her name's Allison Rosen. She has a great podcast called Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend. But anyway, she yesterday I saw on her Instagram story, she was going to tape a podcast, and she posted before taping it saying, "Ugh, I'm in the worst mood and, like, dreading this." And I feel like that a lot. It's really weird. I do so many podcasts, but right before, and not with you though. I didn't feel dread with you. Right before, a lot of the time I feel this weird dread, but I don't know why I feel this dread, because I enjoy conversation. That's what I like, talking. I don't know why I would feel so much dread. And then once I do it, and then I'm out of it, I'm like, whoa, I enjoyed myself and didn't feel like that was a chore at all. But right leading up into it, until the minute I started, I was like, ugh. So does your brain turn on while you're doing these types of things? Is that, like, because I don't know why I always feel like everything's a chore when I know I'm going to actually enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I think, and this is something, I mean, I struggle with it too. Like, don't think just because I'm talking about stuff that like I don't have the same problems, because I totally do. But I think something I've been doing lately, because I was talking to a friend about this and they were saying the same thing, like, oh, I hate everything. Ugh, it feels like a chore. And I was like, yeah, I do that. But same, then when I start, I feel fine. And I've decided that it's how I talk to myself about it leading up.
So yes. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, but I have to do, I have to, the way I even verbalize it in my brain, I'm like, I have to do that thing.
Right. Or, yes. Yes. Oh my God. That's it. That's what it is.
Yeah. Instead of being like, I love what I do. What a cool fucking job I have. Look at this. How amazing. Like, so I've been trying even in my own, and it's actually changed. It hasn't 100% gone away, but even just yesterday I had to film a bunch of videos because I'm going on vacation. So I was getting prepared and I was like, for a split second, I went into that, oh, why do I have to do this? It's Sunday. I don't want to work. Ugh. And then I was like, no, how awesome that I get to take all this time off. And all I have to do is do this. This is amazing. And who knows who it'll help. And I hope that this comes across really well and super cool. And I know it's like, it's a small shift, but it's an important shift. And when I shifted my brain to be like, no, and it'll only take like 2 or 3 hours and I'll be fine. I'm totally done. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
I do tend to, when I am feeling annoyed with what I'm doing, I do maybe, you know, what's a little cliche, but I think back to when I was waiting tables and how much I hated that. And the fact that I don't have to ask how someone likes their steak cooked ever again for them, hopefully, fingers crossed, I immediately do change my perspective and I'm like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't come to me to think like that all the time. Like it, you know, once every 10 complaints do I go, wait a second. But I love that you said changing the word have. I have to do this, because whenever I have to do, well, I just said it, you know, whenever I'm going to do a podcast, I always say, well, I have to do a podcast later, or I have to do, you know, I have to read some stuff first, or, you know, and it does make it feel like a chore. So I think maybe a better word to pick would be I'm going to, maybe, because I'm definitely not the cheery type to be like, I'm looking forward to reading later about, you know, XYZ. Like that is a little too extreme for me, but I think going to is just subtle enough of a change to make it feel less burden-y.
Yeah. Because that's the way we kind of talk about everything in life. It's like, oh, what do you have to do today? Oh, I have to, like, but I really don't have to do anything. Like, so if you just say, oh, you know, today I'm going to, I think that is a nice shift, because I'm the same. I can't get all like, I call it being like, I don't know, just super hokey pajokey about things. Like, I am so joyful to do, like, no.
Right. Yeah. No, thanks.
That just doesn't feel authentic. Yeah. So yeah, maybe just I'm going to, because all I've been doing with myself is like, when I find myself saying, oh, I have to do this or whatever. And I'm like, I'll just in my head, like, I don't know, maybe just feisty me in my brain will be like, Katie, you like what you do. Stop complaining about it. What's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I like shift back into like, okay, well, I'm just going to do this. It'll be over in a bit and it'll be great. And then we'll be done.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a therapist a long time ago. I don't know if she came up with this or if I did. And it was definitely in more of a playful spirit. But she, I said, call me Christine. Or no, call me Christina. My name is Kristen. And Kristen is the weak, like lethargic, passive, just can't get out of bed, gross pajama pants wearer. And Christina is feisty and she's kind of, she's sassy and she's got a little attitude. And so I don't know what we were doing really in therapy and how long that even lasted for, but I think I said it because whenever someone does get my name wrong, like if someone calls me Christine or Christina, I say, no, please call me that, because I am so much stronger as that person, because I've associated Kristen with being like the weak pushover nerd. And so I want to get a tattoo or something to remind me that I'm Christina.
Yeah.
And so I think the guy, to go back to his question about, trying to find something for him, I think maybe rediscovering like his, like you said, to try other things and discovering a new persona? Is that wrong? That sounds like kind of like multiple personality-ish that I'm promoting, but I'm not. But it's like finding that like fire within you that used to maybe exist, like you said, when you were a kid and the curiosities.
Yeah, because I don't think it's bad. I mean, it was funny. It's funny you say that because just the other day I was filming a video with another bunch of YouTubers and we were talking about different parts of ourselves. And I'm Katie, just K-A-T-I, right? Mm-hmm. And I was saying like, like when I get really feisty or whatever, he's like, oh, then Katie with an E comes out because people always misspell my name.
Yeah.
And I was like, because I'm like, I will tell people, I'm like, that's not how I spell my name. Like I'm super direct and like, I don't know why it's become like this thing because everybody messes it up.
Of course,
since I was a child, I was like, nope, it's not short for Catherine. There is no E, it's just K-A-T-I. Like I'm very, and so that part of me that's not afraid of the confrontation, like I normally am, and isn't afraid to like stand up for myself.
Yeah.
And so he referenced it later. He's like, oh, then Katie with an E comes out. And I think it can be powerful to imagine a different part of yourself, like a new creation of you, you know, even, I don't know if anybody's a huge fan of The Office, but I am. And after Andy comes back from going to anger management class, he's like, call me Drew.
Yeah.
He wants to change instead of Andy. And I think we can kind of do that, like shift into a new version of yourself.
Yeah. Well, when I was in first grade, I said to my teacher, her name was Mrs. Pavis. And luckily I didn't really know the word penis at the time, but so no one made like jokes about her name.
That joke.
And it's not even that close. I'm just a child now as an adult, but I my initials are KC, letter K, letter C. And I wanted her to call me Casey, like the name Casey, because at that time I didn't like myself and I felt meek and weak as Kristen. And I really thought if I was Casey, I would be the cooler girl. No one would pick on me. I wouldn't have these big goofy glasses. And I was so devastated because she would not call me Casey. And it really, I wonder if that affected, you know, if she did say, okay, let's call you Casey, if that would have been like a changing moment for me. And I think,
yeah, like a defining moment.
Totally. Yeah. And I think maybe once when I got to LA, I was like, maybe my stage name will be Casey Carney, you know, instead of,
yeah.
And I, you know, I of course didn't have the balls at the time to do that. And now I don't even know if it's necessary, but I did feel like that little tiny perception of myself, that change in the perception of myself would have been immensely helpful. So I think Jay, who asked the question, he's letter J. Maybe he can be J-A-Y instead of just J, and find some stuff to make him feel alive.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be kind of empowering to imagine yourself. Like I don't know if I shared this in my book, but this is something I talk with my friends often about, is like the thought that we can shed skins of our past selves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And especially
if you have psoriasis, I definitely would like to shed that skin.
Exactly. You can totally shed that skin. Don't worry. It's driving you crazy anyway. But I've said that like in dealing with past relationships that like don't suit me anymore, or just are toxic or not healthy, or even just like guys I've broken up with over the years, I always like to imagine that if I saw them on the street, they wouldn't even recognize me because I'm not the same. Like I've shed that skin of myself. Right. And I think in a lot of ways in our life, we need to kind of like shed skins of ourselves and know that it's okay to be different than we used to be. It's okay to question that. It's okay to not like the things you used to do. And there's nothing, no one that says you can't, you know, you are the creator of your own universe. So
yeah, I'm going to shed those skins but then hoard them. And so it's super creepy looking. I just have a little, Okay. So the last question is, do you think males that came from violent upbringings have issues committing to people in relationships?
I mean, I think everybody does. I mean, yes, you could say males do, but I think females do too. I think a lot of us who grow up in really violent upbringings, like where there's a lot of abuse, we can be too terrified of two things. Like I find females, and this, I'm just putting people in buckets. I know not everybody, you know, belongs in a bucket, but I'm just putting them in buckets for this question. I find females are, I know, exactly.
Just you just bucket away.
Okay, cool. So females, I find, are more worried about getting in another abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. So they're worried about their safety. males, at least the ones that I've treated in it, let's say my N in my study is only like 10 over the years. So it's not a huge number, but the males that I've treated are afraid that they will become the abuser. And they're almost too hyper aware of that, so much so that they're like super passive and end up getting taken advantage of in other ways. And so there definitely are repercussions, obviously, for any kind of abuse, whether it be physical, neglectful, sexual, whatever. But that is very common. And I think, you know, the best way to like push yourself out of that shell that you've kind of, I guess you're hiding in for safety, is to work on processing through the trauma you sustained. Because I feel like until we make sense of what happened, even though I know it's nonsensical, I'm not saying like it makes sense, but I mean, in your brain to be able to process it through so much so that you're like, yes, that's what happened. No, it doesn't have to affect me anymore. I've moved on. The emotions aren't attached to it. I've put them where they belong. Like the, you know, any of the guilt I felt, I know isn't mine. Here, take it back. Any of the shame I felt isn't mine. Okay, that belongs on you. Like we can do some exercises in therapy to like put it to rest for us, so that then we can cultivate happy, healthy relationships. Because I truly believe people can totally move on past it, but it is very common for people to be afraid of relationships in general when you come out of such a horrific and potentially terrifying upbringing.
Do you think that's a form of PTSD at all? Like a minor form of it?
Yes. Oh, yes, yeah. Because part of PTSD is like we can have flashbacks and feel like we're back there in that same scenario. And then hypervigilance, which is like any kind of noise where, you know, we're like on edge. Everything reminds us of it. And I think if it was someone that was supposed to care for you, love you, or be supportive in some way, we kind of are like, we're so afraid of going back there that like the hypervigilance keeps us away. Does that make sense? Right.
Absolutely. I mentioned on one of my last shows that I have extremely vivid nightmares about 6 or 7 nights a week. And I've had them for a really long time. And interestingly enough, I haven't really talked about them in therapy for whatever reason. I think because they became so normal to me. And I'm realizing as of late, they're not really normal and I'm not seeing a therapist. And it was funny because my friend said to me yesterday, she said, "How are you?" And I told her what was going on in my life. And you know, your life isn't going great when her response was, "Are you seeing a therapist?" Like, you know, it's like, okay, so no, I'm not. And I'm not really, and I want to get to this idea of finding therapy. And I know you talk about that in your book. But she said, "Are you talking to one?" I said, "No, where I am, like, we don't even have like a Starbucks. I doubt there's going to be some great affordable situation for me to find therapy, but there probably is. I just don't know how to find it. And I'm going to get to that in a second. But since I have you here, why do you think, I mean, you don't know much about my background, but how do I get rid of these intense nightmares that I have daily? And to give you a tiny bit of background, and this was just on a recent episode, so I'm sorry to listeners to have to hear this again, but I had a childhood where I was picked on severely by a group of kids. It wasn't all the kids, but it was a group of them. But in my world, that felt like the entire world hated me.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So I've not been able to move on from that. I'm 35 and I constantly have dreams that people hate me no matter where I go or what I do. And I even said on the episode recently that I have dreams that ghosts even hate me. Like I had a demonic spirit grabbing me by the ponytail and whipping me around a room. Because everyone just hates me. Like whenever I open my messages or open my email, I have just this fear that I'm going to open it to someone just telling me how terrible I am. How do I move the fuck on and get the fuck over this shit? Cause I was, I'm not in high school anymore. It's not happening anymore. I'm 35. How do I let it go?
Well, and I'm assuming these dreams or nightmares have happened more recently only, did you say?
No, I've been having super intense nightmares since I was about 18. And that's around when my depression, I think, really actually started. But I tend to have generally a theme. I would say, maybe a couple nights a week, the theme is that I'm hated. in whatever somebody form that
me.
Is.
Yeah.
Someone hates me. I go to a group. They all hate me. And it's weird because I think generally people don't really hate me, you know, but that's become my reality. In high school, I wouldn't know if I showed up to a sporting event, if I was going to walk into the wrong section of the bleachers and just be hated. So I, not that I enjoyed going to sporting events in high school, by the way, but I was just there. I was really into, potentially winning $70. But I just haven't been able to let that fear go.
Well, and it might not just be fear, because I don't think people give enough, not credit, that sounds bad, but enough weight to bullying.
Yeah.
Because that is still traumatizing. Just so we're all on the same page, in order to be traumatized, all we have to do is fear for our own life or the life of someone else. So yeah. I'm sure you did.
I fear for my hair. I don't know if they'd rip my hair out at some point. I never really totally feared for my life. Yeah, I did feel fear for my safety. I had one experience where I was driving home from school and they were tailgating me on my bumper about, barely a foot or maybe, less than a foot away from my bumper all the way home.
That's traumatizing.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think and I'm just saying that because a lot of people downplay things that have happened to them, especially in their past. Cause we look back with 35-year-old glasses and we're like, oh, that wasn't that bad. But at the time it was the fucking worst. We hated it. And it made school super hard and terrible. And we probably didn't want to go. And you know what I mean?
I can't even do math. Now I got to worry about the bullies too. Jesus Christ.
I got enough going on. Totally. Right. And I think that we look back and downplay it because we're like, oh, but it's not that bad. No, it was. And it's important to recognize that it was bad. And really the way to make the nightmares and just the overall upset about this go away is to talk to someone and talk it through until you're able to look back on those scenarios, kind of like I was saying about the physical abuse and processing it through. You're supposed to be able to look back until it has no emotional charge. So you can talk about it and you don't feel anything about it. It's almost like you're telling them a story that is totally benign. You're like, oh, and I went to this party and it was fine. It was cool. Whatever. That kind of way.
I know it'll be different for everybody, but how long generally would that take to get to that point? Because it's I feel I can talk and talk and talk in therapy and I never feel, I'm at a different point mentally or emotionally.
Well, you might need more directive therapy because talk therapy, yes, it works and it works for a lot of people, but there's also more directive. I do a lot of CBT or DBT styles of therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy and dialectical behavior therapy. And they all come along with homework. And I know people are like, oh, homework, but this is different because even you not doing it is enough, just FYI, because it tells us something. So homework is really just us giving you something to see if it works so we can do it's we're investigating. We're figuring out what we know and what we don't know. And so what you might need potentially is more of a CBT style where we challenge, because it sounds like you have these false, we call them falsely held beliefs or faulty thinking. And my guess is that some of that is no one likes me. Everybody hates me. I'm always going to get picked on. I'm never going to be the cool kid. Who knows what it is? I'm a loser. Yeah. Could be all sorts of
worms. Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. It was in that little sing song. And so paying attention and realizing what thoughts you have every day and what ones you believe and which ones you don't. And then working with you to, when you start having those thoughts, oh, I'm going to open my email and someone's going to hate me. I would encourage you to stop, breathe. And be like, what's the likelihood that that's actually what I'm going to open my email to?
Right.
Not very likely. And yeah, does that really mean?
No, perhaps.
Totally. But for the most part, that's not what's going to happen.
Right.
And it's kind of like proving to yourself that you are valued, you are likable, you aren't a teenage you anymore. So along with the talking it out and processing it, because that might not even be your problem. The problem might be what you've accepted now as truth within your own mind, maybe not even realizing you're doing that. you know?
Well, I have a question regarding that because, you know, there are certain beliefs I think people have about themselves. And I know this is true for me, where I know it's not really true. My logical brain knows it's not true, but I function in my daily life as if it's true. So say the thought is, I'm really not funny at all. I think I, like, someone wrote to me the other day and they were like, do you actually realize that you are funny, or do you totally actually truly don't, you know, like, basically just asking, what is my belief on my thoughts about being funny?
Yeah.
This show, these episodes may not prove that I am funny, but if you want to go to my Twitter or something, my Twitter's funnier. Anyway, I wrote back and basically said, deep down, I know I'm true, but there is so much shit piled on that truth that it's hard to get to.
So totally.
How do people distinguish, like, or no, that's not the right word, or not the right way to ask it. How do you have dual thoughts on something? How do you get rid of the other one? Because you know deep down something is what it is, but yet you have this other, that thing on your shoulder, the other voice telling you it is true. How do you squash that one?
Yeah, it's called cognitive dissonance, when something that we're doing is not in line with how we truly think, feel, and believe.
Right.
And the way that we kind of squash or shovel off the shit that's piled on top, essentially, is to cultivate, to grow, to focus on what we truly know, the truth. Because what we actually, by talking nastily to ourselves and not realizing it, or by acting out of it and not realizing it, all those nasty things, is that by doing that, we're only further lumping shit on it. Do you know what I mean? We're making it harder and harder for us to accept and believe that we are funny, that we are lovable. And so instead of doing the things that make that harder and harder to acknowledge, we should, you know, attempt to acknowledge and cultivate the other thing. Like, I am funny. Like, look for evidence to support that. Do things that help you feel funny and practice that comedy that you do. You know what I mean? Like, we're just going to engage in that instead of in the other stuff.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree. It is. Yeah, it is hard, but it's like
a conscious. Yeah.
Right. Conscious. The problem is, it's like when it's a conscious decision, I feel like it can easily be forgotten. Like, you have to remind yourself to be aware, but then you have to remind yourself to remind yourself, you know?
Totally. You just have to be more mindful, which is hard because our life doesn't always lend to that. But if we're just aware of what we're doing and why we're doing it, and just noticing when you're starting to feel bad, like, hey, if I spent this whole day like doing things that, you know, aren't serving me, like they serve this nasty belief about myself. Maybe I'm going to try not to do that. Okay. You know, and it's just one thing at a time, just trying to redirect your thoughts and pull them back into something more positive and more healthy for you. But it takes practice. We're building a new muscle, and, you know, it takes some time to grow that muscle till it's stronger than the other muscle.
Right. Totally. So I'm going to transition now into our segments. Okay. And I do a segment called Schizophilmia, which is a very creative way, a really creative name. But before I get to Schizophilmia, I want to do Schizobookia, which I added on recently. Recommend books. And I obviously want to talk about yours called Are You Okay? And I'm going to let you talk about it. But I really want to ask you about finding help and finding the right therapist, because I know that's a lot of what your book is about. And I, for the love of God, cannot figure out how to find someone, especially how to find someone on a budget. So I want you to tell me all about that.
Yeah. So my book, Are You Okay? A Guide to Caring for Your Mental Health, is essentially a mental health 101. Where do you start? What do you even ask? What do you need to know? Because often we don't know what we don't know. You know what
I
mean?
Right,
so we don't even know the questions to ask, because we're like, what do I do? And so it walks you through what's the difference between mental health and mental illness, because I think people use them interchangeably and they're not the same. Mm-hmm. and talking about what different types of therapists exist, what's a good therapist versus a bad therapist. I go through all mental health professionals as well, not just therapists, but social workers, psychiatrists, like, what does that mean? And different types of therapy. And then also like the most common communication issues that we have that can harm our relationships, and then how to get out of toxic relationships. And the book is just like something that I hope people will use as a tool to figure out what they don't know and get the help that they need in an educated and empowered way. Because I think people are always afraid to reach out because what if I go in and they say nothing's wrong with me? Or what if I go and they're like, oh my God, you need to be in the hospital. Or I try to see someone and I don't like them. How do I stop seeing them? Like there's a lot of random questions. Or how do I find someone? Like that's your main question. How do I find someone?
It's overwhelming.
Yeah. And it's also just, it's already, it takes a lot of effort just to even consider that. And usually when we're not doing well, we don't have the energy. And so it's just a very, in layman's terms, it's not in crazy, you know, therapist-y language. It talks about how you do all of that. And so I hope that it just really helps people. It helps them realize that they can be empowered and they can make healthy and helpful decisions about their mental health. And as far as how to find a therapist on a budget, if you are in like a rural area, there are online resources. I mean, I've done some work with BetterHelp in the past because they have online therapy at a low cost and you just Skype or email or text or whatever works for you. I mean, I prefer in person if it's possible, but not all of us have access to someone that way.
I never really realized that. I forget like right now because I'm in this rural area, my brain works at a rural level, which is thinking the only thing that exists are farms and there's no technology and I can't Skype with somebody. You know, it's like I don't even that's a I'm too I, my it's like my brain is clouded with the smell of or something. It's like I forget. Oh, we have the internet. I can talk to someone on the internet. I don't even think about that.
Yeah. No, but I think that's very normal.
What was that site called that you just
mentioned? Called BetterHelp.
Okay, BetterHelp. Cool.
And there's other resources as well. You can look up different I want to say it's like Talkspace or Talk Life, one of those. I always get them mixed up. If any of my viewers are listening, they're like, Katie always messes those up. And I do. I don't know why. Well, it just doesn't stick in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't, yeah, if so, it stuck in your brain, it would be weird because they're so similar.
Yeah, that's a problem. One is peer support. One is actual therapist support. So just check that out. But, yeah.
I knew that.
I'm like, why'd you name them so close? Like,
I know. It's Talkspace and then Talk what?
Talk Life.
Okay. Talkspace. I always get ads on my Instagram for Talkspace.
Then I assume that's the one with professionals because the other one's free. So
it is.
Most likely. Yes.
Oh, cool. The other one's free. So
and there are peer support things that are free, like 7 Cups of Tea is one. It's called 7cups.com.
Wow, I'd have to pee after that one.
I know. It's a lot of tea.
With the free one, and you said it's peer driven. So
peer support.
Peer support. So do you just send a text or something and immediately someone starts texting back?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, wow.
Or there's chat. Like it depends on the way that the different apps are structured. Like some are text-based, some are just in the app. There's like chat going. And they train some of their, you know, their peer people, like even the crisis text line, 741-741, if you're in crisis, you can text them and you'll have a certified peer counselor. So someone who's trained to be a crisis counselor, will text with you. And they're not like licensed mental health professionals. They're just trained to be able to help you manage and they're, you know, the best ways to communicate with you and help you feel better.
Yeah. And so how, if you do have money to spend or not, how do you find the best therapist?
Honestly, the best way is word of mouth. And I know that that's obviously not going to be accessible to everyone and not everyone wants to talk with their friends and family about their mental health, which I totally get. But if you have that opportunity and someone in your life is seeing a therapist they love, because often if they like them, they'll rave about them and like, oh, I went to therapy and it's been so helpful. Then ask them who. Be like, what's their name?
You know what my problem, you know what my problem is with therapists is I almost become like friends. Not that they do this, but I almost take on this like, oh, I really like them. I'd go have coffee with them. And then I don't speak in a way that's as honest as if I didn't care if the person judged me. Because it's like, if I like the therapist, I want them to like me or think that I'm like likable or something. I think probably because I'm so concerned with people hating me.
That's what I was just going to say. Go back to the fact that you worry everybody's going to hate you.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, so I try to put on a little, not performance. That's not the right word to say. I'm genuine in therapy, but
you put your best foot forward.
Yeah.
Essentially is what it sounds like.
Absolutely. And so, what do I do to not do that? Is it okay to just be like, here's the shittiest shit about me ever, and like you'll still respect me?
Oh, totally. Yes, 100%. But I know you might not be able to. And I think hopefully, I mean, there's two things. A good therapist, like I would call you on that in a heartbeat. Like if you were too friendly, too happy, too, like I would be like, do you feel like you're putting on a show? Like,
yeah, like I'm trying out bits on them or something.
Uh-huh. Because I would, like, I've asked a patient once, I was like, how would you feel if like you didn't get a chance to shower and you were running really late and you came in here and you tripped on your way in? How would that affect how you talk to me? Because are they going to be embarrassed is what I'm getting at. Like, are you worried about what I think? And like, like it's a meeting, like I'm your boss or a friend or someone that would like joke with you or tease you. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be curious with that, like about you particularly, but you could even say, you can just cut the shit and be like, I'm going to try to be friends with you in my head and it's going to make things awkward because I always worry people are going to hate me.
Right. But, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. There it is. Yeah.
I'm really honest. It's weird. I'm a very, very, very honest person. And I do think I'm honest in therapy. And like, to be honest with you, I don't think I've ever showered before therapy. I probably have tripped 4 times at least getting into the office. but like certain little things that, you know, like one time I said, you know, because I would always sit in the couch, like, and I just said, I would love to, you know, sit in the, or on the couch with my legs on the ground and kind of in a formal way. And one day I finally said, like, I really just want to sit with my feet crossed Indian style. Do you mind if I like take off my shoes? And it was like that type of thing where I didn't want to be almost not like, I didn't want her to see me as some teenage, like acting like a teenager going, I'm going to take my shoes off and cross my legs on the couch. It was like those little things that I would try to present myself in a certain way.
Yeah.
But it was weird because I didn't care about looking like shit and having smelly breath. But we didn't talk that close, of course. we weren't making out during the session.
But that's also interesting, not to get really into it, but like that you would, everybody wants to be comfortable. First of all, that totally is normal and makes sense. But I bet part of you when you're in therapy does act like teenage you. Mm-hmm. Because that's where the problems came from.
True. Absolutely. So especially when I take out, my wallet to pay, because I still have teenage me bank account. That's where I'm the most teenage-y.
Yeah. You're like, this is me. Very first bank account.
Yep.
But I think that's totally fine. And it's something that you can definitely speak up and say like, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. And this is what I know I do. You can just call it, like call it out loud. But a good therapist should slowly notice or at least question. Cause we don't want to obviously not everyone is going to be like you and have that same scenario. So it might not mean anything, but as a therapist, I'm always just very observant and curious and ask a lot of questions about things. So there's that. And the online thing can be beneficial, although being in the room is preferred. If you can, just because there's things that you can miss and hide when you're on Skype or FaceTime or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just make sure that they hear you, you like them, and you feel like they're on your team. Like, that's what I always say. I want to feel like they're on your side, like they're rooting for you. And that's really it. That's how you find a good therapist.
How do I find a good book? This is me hinting at you telling me how to find your book.
Yeah, you can find it on Amazon, Barnes and Nobles. It's just called Are You Okay? And my name is Katie Morton. So you can just look it up and
it's on there. It's already available and everything.
Yeah. It came out December 11th.
Ooh, awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome. Okay, so we're gonna do a little schizophilia now. And I'm curious, have you ever heard of and or seen the movie? There's a movie and a documentary called Grey Gardens.
No. What's it about? It's
so scarily close to my life, but it's really cool. I really recommend anyone interested in mental health or not mental health, because it's not necessarily mental health themed, but it's mm-hmm. about two women, their mother and daughter. Both of them were named Edith, and they went by Big Edie and Little Edie. And they were related to Jackie Onassis, and they came from a very affluent background. And the two of them, the mother and daughter, essentially started living in squalor after the father left them and didn't leave them any money. And they basically became isolated together and had this really weird codependent relationship. But I watched a movie about them last night. It's like an actual written movie, and it's with Jessica Lange and Drew Barrymore, and they do an amazing job. And I haven't actually yet seen the documentary, which came out in the 1970s. But the two women, they're so fascinating and so not addicting to watch, but there's something so strange, but yet appealing about them. And I was going to ask if you had seen it. If not, you know, obviously it's okay you hadn't, but I was curious about what their mental, maybe quote unquote, illness would have
been. What was going on?
Yeah. They both had dreams of being singers and performers, and neither of them got to pursue their dreams. And they, I think, continued to stay slightly delusional, and they were hoarding, and they had like, they were living with raccoons and a million cats. And you know, so anyway, it's super fascinating. The movie itself, like the written movie, was actually really, really well done. Like I haven't seen the documentary yet, but I'm sure it's just as fascinating. So you should definitely watch it.
Yeah. I'll add it to my list. It's in the queue.
Yeah. Okay, good. But just for anyone listening, it's almost like scarily close to my life, because the daughter wanted to go to New York and pursue showbiz. And she wanted to be a performer and an actress and a dancer and a singer. And she was very vibrant. And there were a series of events that stopped her from doing that and ended up keeping her home with her mother. And it was so funny, because last night I watched the movie with my mom, and their home was called Gray Gardens, and my parents' house is on a street called Ray Street. So I jokingly said to my mom, "This is Ray Gardens instead of Gray Gardens." And I put it, and it, we were so scarily similar in a funny way to those two, but it also served as a warning to me, because currently I'm at my parents and I haven't moved to, I've been in LA for 10 years. You know, I came back a few months ago and I'm transitioning to New York City. But I haven't gone yet, and I kind of keep finding reasons not to, and that's exactly what happened in the movie. And then she went insane, and so anyway.
So you're like, this is a good reminder.
It was like looking in a mirror, and it was the scariest mirror I've ever looked into. But yeah, definitely check that out. And then the last segment we're going to do is called Antidepressant of the Week. So if you could just tell me something that you did this week that made you feel good or felt you felt happy doing, if you want to share that
with
us. I mean,
there's a lot of things I do. Yeah. I mean, I went to yoga on Monday, which is like how I keep myself sane. And so that was really nice. And then I, tomorrow I am actually getting together with one of my oldest friends from college, and I haven't seen her in probably 3 years. And so I'm really, really excited. We're going to have dinner.
Oh, fun. Those little reunions are always fun.
I know, because she lives in Houston, and so it's hard for us to make time all the time to get together. But I call her, she's like my twin. We're like the most similar. Like, I don't have to explain everything to her. She just gets it, you know? And so I'm really excited to catch up with her.
Well, that's awesome. Well, this week has been a little tough for me in the antidepressant arena because of the news I got with my dog. And so I am currently struggling to find something that made me happy this week, but I think just cuddling the shit out of my dog has been probably the highest point of the week, and hopefully it'll go up from there. But just getting to have some more time with him has been lovely. But he is a maniac, and what happened we're very similar, him and I, never, but he wasn't eating for a few days, and it was making me very nervous, of course. And I started to notice he was looking really skinny and thin. He's always been picky with food, but this was, you know, an extreme case. And so he has aggression problems, and I know exactly what makes him aggressive and what makes him not aggressive, but I was trying desperately to get him to eat when I didn't know it was wrong. And he bit me on the finger so hard. I had to go to urgent care twice.
He really got you.
Be good. And it was infected really badly. But even through that, like this wound I have on my finger right now, it makes me love him more. And in a weird way, the bite, this sounds really, like I said, I'm masochistic, I think, sometimes in the way I deal with things, but the bite, like it almost like I was in urgent care and I have no insurance. And so that sucks. But I had to go twice. Yeah, it's no good. So that sucked. But what was like good about the bite in this weird way, in this antidepressant-y way, was that like it was real. Like he's here. Mm-hmm. I have physical proof
here that he hurt me. Yeah.
Right. So that's a him and I have a fucked up relationship, obviously. But it was just a reminder that my buddy is still alive, I guess. So that's my weird antidepressant of the week. But thank you so much for all of this awesome help and information and pointers and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me on. I hope that helps, you know, helps the people that ask their questions.
Me too. So you guys should definitely check out Katie's book called Are You Okay? You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the places that professional shit gets published and good shit gets published. And what is your handle on Twitter? Is it Katie Morton?
Yeah, it's just at Katie Morton, just like my YouTube channel and all my socials.
Remember, that's Katie.
Just K-A-T-I. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Awesome. So thank you guys so much for listening to the show. That's it for me and Katie. So stay sad enough to listen, but not too sad. Bye, guys.